David Clayton has also been in memory mood. He has been enjoying looking back at some of his old road maps and vehicle handbooks. Here is David to explain.
The other day I sat in the chair for a good half hour with a cuppa, looking at a book. So what, you might be thinking. We all do that. But the book which held my fascination and I couldn't put down was a road atlas. I spent all the time flicking through the pages, finding places I'd been and, more to the point, places I hadn't. The colourful pages are a mine of information over and above where the roads go. I was surprised how long it held my interest. I suppose my fascination started as a young lad, in the back seat of the family car. The interminable journeys as we ventured on holiday fully laden back in the 1960s were made slightly less tedious by following the route on the map. My father was averse to major roads, and while the A1 was being widened for a busier motoring age, bypassing the many towns it originally served, he preferred to stick to the old route of the historic Great North Road. This meant we queued to get through places like Bawtree, Doncaster and Boroughbridge. During the 1980s, I was a roving reporter for Radio 4, which had me heading off to all four corners of England, Scotland and Wales. I absolutely relied on a road atlas to figure out a route. On entering any major town to which I hadn't been before, I'd stop to buy an A to Z street map from the nearest newsagent. Until I had a clear out last year, a whole shelf of my bookcase was taken up with 50 or so books and maps of the UK's towns and cities. Modern sat-nav has rendered these things obsolete, but I felt guilty and a little nostalgic parting with them. These days, when I drive around the country, I pretty much know where everywhere is in relation to everywhere else, so can usually head off without consulting a map. Me and a Bartholomew's motoring atlas were good friends. The pages were well thumbed and got me out of many pointless meanderings, although I soon realised the inevitable flaw with a road map. Much like a set of encyclopedias, as soon as you bought a copy, it was out of date. They tried to foretell the future with the odd dotted line signifying a road about to be built, but you needed to buy another after a year or so. I should throw out these obsolete road atlases, still taking up space on my bookshelf, but I'm loath to. I have a sat-nav in the car, and I still carry a compact road map book too. Am I unnecessarily hanging on to the past? My grown-up children simply turn to their smartphones if they're trying to find somewhere and look bemused if I toss them my road atlas to help. It's almost as if they don't know how to use it. Recently, I had cause to clear some family papers from my late cousin Martin's house near Newcastle. He lost a battle with cancer far too young, at 63. As he was sadly the last of his family branch to survive, he'd become the repository for much of their flotsam and jetsam, and it was a family that threw nothing away. Thank goodness they didn't, because among the books and papers was a fascinating glimpse into our motoring past. His parents had bought a Perrier motor map of England and Wales. It was, it proudly boasted, by special appointment to His Majesty King George V, which I guess dates it to just post-war. They married in 1947 and for a few carefree years motored all over the UK as well as Europe. The branded Perrier map was their stylish way of navigating the country. It's in a green faux leather pouch with 13 individual numbered sheets covering the country, plus a London street map and a table of distances. In practical terms, you simply choose the page relating to the part of country through which you were driving, pulled it out of the pouch, and placed it at the front. The large Perspex window then displayed the very part of the country you needed right then. Given I know my aunt and uncle were doing their journeys in an open-topped MG sports car, this was an elegant waterproof solution as to where to turn left or right. It offered a clear display of trunk roads, main roads and other routes, with a timely reminder that Perrier was, back then, the champagne of table waters. The pouch of maps was stylish enough not to look out of place in the lounge of a nice hotel while you studied the next day's route over a gin and tonic before dinner. It was only carbonated water, after all, but Perrier missed no chance to elevate their image, claiming it to be obtainable at every good hotel and club in the world. I've pictures of my Aunt Avril and Uncle Ted alongside their MG with the enviable registration number MG3880. In dour post-war Britain, when few people had a car, this sort of motoring was as exciting as it could get, especially if it was a warm, sunny day. They were a stylish couple out to enjoy a decade of freedom in their car before my late cousin Martin came along in 1958. This more elegant bygone age of motoring is also served well by AA and RAC members' handbooks, of which I have a few. These also now belong to the obsolete pile thanks to the internet. In the RAC guide and handbook for members dated 1932 to 1933, you can look up hotels, market days and garages. The helpful note that says, for example, Sleaford's early closing day was Thursday, no longer applies. That quirk of half-day closing is long gone, giving way to shops open all hours now. On page 112, you can check on the steepness of roads. Given the average cars were much less powerful than they are today, and their gearboxes were, well, to put it mildly, challenging, negotiating a steep hill was a serious consideration. They were listed county by county, and after checking, unsurprisingly, Norfolk, Suffolk and Cambridgeshire had no hills worthy of note in the handbook. Predictably, Yorkshire had the longest list. The Road Atlas market was well populated by the two main motoring organisations. I have my father's old Reader's Digest AA book, which had maps with a helpful fold-out leaf, so you never had to flick between pages to continue your journey. The folding section linked the maps across two pages, and the back of the fold-out bit had notes on historic attractions. I graduated to this tome on my knee during long family car trips, as I believed my backseat commentary reached new levels of interest for my captive family audience. Sat-nav is a wonder of our modern world and has quickly been taken for granted. I really don't mind that nice lady saying, "In 200 yards, turn left." But if it's all the same to you, I'm hanging on to the road atlases and handbooks. Now then, when in 1933 was it early closing day in King's Lynn?
Thank you, David.